This is Jim Engster. Thanks for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you're having a festive holiday season and glad you're with us on WRKF. If you'd like to join the conversation, your number is 877-217-5757. You can send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. We start today's program with Law 360 senior congressional reporter Michael McEnony, and he is, of course, a busy man. Usually at this time of the year, Congress is dormant, but there is much action going on as we speak, and tonight could be a night in which the government shuts down. President Trump's demand for border wall funds hurled the federal government closer to a shutdown as House Republicans approved a package yesterday with his $5.7 billion request that is almost certain to be rejected by the Senate. Michael McEnony, where are we right now as far as the potential of the government coming to a screeching halt?
Well, we are at a bit of a standoff. As you mentioned, the House passed the bill last night, and Democrats in the Senate have said that it's dead on arrival. They would need 9 Democrats to defect and vote for the wall. The funding package also includes more than $7 billion in disaster relief focused on hurricane-hit areas. That was a sweetener that was used to get some skeptics in the House in line. But it doesn't seem like that's going anywhere in the Senate. So right now, unless one side blinks, it looks like we're headed for a partial government shutdown.
And this comes at a time when, of course, people who have jobs would like to keep them. I mentioned festive holiday season. This could be Scrooge in Washington, couldn't it?
It certainly could. So the way this is going to work is some agencies will maybe be able to cobble together enough money to keep running for a little while. For instance, federal courts are going to be open for about 3 weeks if there's no money. But for those that don't have money, essential employees, so people who, do law enforcement, for instance, will have to come in but won't be paid. And non-essential employees will be furloughed without pay. Now, in the past, after the government has reopened, they've passed legislation to give back pay to those employees, but that's not guaranteed, and that's something that they would have to affirmatively do once they reopen the government. So that would mean several hundred thousand federal employees nationwide, along with an unknown number of contractors who would not be paid in the interim, or if they're contractors, their bosses, their companies would have to decide whether to, take the loss and pay them or, not pay their employees while the government's not paying for their contracts.
Michael McEnony is with us for a bit longer. He is the senior congressional reporter at Law 360 and a listener. Actually, I've had a couple of emails before the show even today asking why it takes 60 votes in the Senate to get this approval of the House measure that was passed yesterday for funding the government. Why is it not 51 votes rather than 60?
So that is due to what's called the legislative filibuster, which is a longstanding rule in the Senate that in order to pass a bill, it has to be advanced. They have to decide to stop debating it with three-fifths of the senators. Right now, that's 60 senators. And there has been some pressure, most recently from the president and a couple of Republican senators, to get rid of the legislative filibuster. But Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and a lot of the current senators have said that they don't want to get rid of it.
Now, wait a minute, though. They did get rid of it in the Supreme Court proceedings involving both Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, didn't they?
They did. But they have also seen the results of what Democrats did in 2013 to get rid of the filibuster for most other appointees. They know that many of those appointees would not have gotten confirmed or would have had a tougher road to confirmation under the Trump administration because they were able to take advantage of that rule change that Democrats made in the last administration. So they know that that rule change could very quickly come back to bite them.
877-217-5757 in our remaining time with Michael McEnony, senior Congress reporter at news outlet Law 360. He's been featured a time or two on Morning Edition, and we're pleased to have him with us. And I mentioned that earlier in the week, the U.S. Senate passed a criminal justice reform legislation, 8712. The naysayers, among the dozen senators who voted no, John Neely Kennedy of Louisiana. But if ever there was a bill with bipartisan support, Michael, it was this one.
Yes, and it has been years, literally years, in the making to get this one across the finish line. Now, there are, of course, naysayers here. You mentioned Senator Kennedy. He's on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he has expressed some concerns that he feels like this bill would allow too many people who are convicted of violent crimes out earlier. Now, the proponents of this bill argue that, for one thing, most of these people who have very long sentences are eventually going to get out anyway, so they want to give them incentives to better themselves before they do. Because under the bill, there are several things that are intended to reduce recidivism or repeat offenses. There are things like good time credits, where if people just behave themselves in prison, they get a certain number of days of credits each year that they are allowed to knock off the end of their sentence. And then there's also earned time credits, for instance, GED programs, that if they participate, they can be eligible for alternative incarceration. This could mean things like being moved to a lower security facility, or things like being released to, like, home confinement early.
All right, a question from Barbara asking about Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law. He apparently played a major role in this. How involved was he?
Yes, he did. He has been very involved in the White House. From people who I've talked to, he has been very involved, particularly on the Republican side, getting people on board and addressing their concerns to bring everybody to the table and keep them there long enough to get this deal through.
And the bill was modeled on a bill in Louisiana that some other southern states also embrace criminal justice reform, Texas and Alabama most notably, but Louisiana actually played a part in this legislation.
Yes, it did. The 2017 reforms played a part in this, and it, in general, is based on the idea that, you know, sentencing and the way that we've housed prisoners has gone a little bit too far and been both unhelpful and too expensive. So they have made changes in this law to improve conditions in the prisons, as I mentioned, reduce recidivism, and also change how some sentences are handed down. So the new First Step Act that is slated to be signed into law today would, on the sentencing side, reduce mandatory minimums, reduce three-strike penalties. Mm-hmm. It would also change how drug and gun charges stack so that they would not stack consecutively in the same way that, you know, somebody who has three small drug deals and they had a gun on them each time doesn't get a 50-year sentence, a 55-year sentence, which is the example that Senator Mike Lee has repeatedly gone to. But at the same time, it would apply those gun charges to other crimes, so they would overall be sentenced. Drug dealers would overall be sentenced to less time if they had a gun on them but did not otherwise use it during the commission of the crime. But other people who commit crimes while they have a gun on them would get an increased sentence, and would also make retroactive some of the changes from the Fair Sentencing Act, and that was a 2000. And that reduced the disparity between powder cocaine and crack sentencing from 100 to 1 to 18 to 1. That's now retroactive, and it affects, I believe the last count was about 6,000 federal inmates.
All right. Lastly, how much is the Beltway buzzing today about General Mattis, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, resigning as saying the president deserves a defense secretary who believes, as the president does, that the U.S. should pull out of Syria? What's your take on this?
Well, the first reactions on both sides of the aisle were surprise. For one thing, the decision earlier this week to take troops out of Syria took both sides by surprise. This resignation has also taken both sides by surprise. Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi said last night that she was shocked.
Well, Michael McEnany, thank you for joining us, and I'm sure we'll have occasion to talk soon. I hope so, and happy holidays to you, and we'll be back after this pause with more Talk Louisiana.